Frankford Research and Extension Center is located about 10 miles east of the main MU campus. So as a result, we're the home of 35 to 40 different MU and USA scientists. But what's neat about us is that we're on that interface between the glacial till plains of the north and the Ozarks to the south. And as a result of this, we have been we've had a statewide mission for traditional agronomic research for over 40 years. Now, some could be in production or physiology, such as what Misty does out there, or we could be genetics and breeding in wheat, corn, soybeans, and also production in forages, I should add, and also plant protection and weed science, entomology, plant pathology. And we have used this research as a background for our outreach and extension efforts. Now, we do not have a traditional field day anymore, because as we have become more suburban out there, our base of clients has decreased. We have a field day and not that many farmers are in the area. You know, they're getting larger and fewer and far between. So what we have started to do, and John Coleman started this, was let's train the trainer. So we give a lot of intense training events out at Bradford, and these go on several times throughout the year. But we've thought that we've got to take this step one further, because we need to expand that audience. We need to get more into the local people to teach them something about agriculture also. So we have also expanded into produce research in tomatoes with hoop houses, as well as out in the field. And we've also looked at how can we train the new generations coming up? How can we extend this information? So we have corn mazes. We have pumpkin patches, so when kids come out for tours about science and what have you, we can give them a little treat. We tell them, if you're good, you have to go to the corn maze or to the pumpkin patch. We gave away about 2,000 pumpkins this year. I was about ready to disc it up toward the end of the season, because it does get quite intense. But we also want to look at, what about our landowners out there? We want to do something about with them also, because we have a lot of absentee landowners that own land there are using it for recreation. Now, when you think about wildlife, the first thing that comes to people's mind is deer, wild turkey. As you know, those have no spot for a research center, right? Because they can create some havoc. This 10-point buck was shot just across the fence from us this fall. Not a good sign to have out there. But what we wanted to emphasize instead was the northern bobwhite quail. Some people will call this a sacred bird now, because there's so much emphasis on it. And it probably should be. I borrowed this information. I actually made this graph with some data from Illinois. It looks at the quail harvest in Illinois from 1956 to the present. And as we see, there's about 2.5 million birds harvested in Illinois in the 1950s and 1960s. And the differences that we have in population or harvest would mainly due to winter factors. But then we see this big decrease in numbers of harvested quail in the 1970s. I was in high school during this time, and I remember our Secretary of Ag said, boys, let's plant fence row to fence row. We tore out fence rows. We planted crops we never planted crops before. Quail populations decreased. Deer populations have increased over the years, but quail is the one animal that could not respond to that, because we took out a lot of its habitat. Now, we've also seen this decrease in the last 10 years. I can speculate on that. It's probably we're getting a lot better at controlling the weeds in the fence rows, in the fields. We've taken a little bit more of their habitat away. So that's what we think's going on. And I apologize for this. It looked a lot better on my screen. But this is our aerial photograph of the Bradford Research Center. And we have some areas here that are not really used for research. And we thought this would be a great place that we could do some research and demonstration on how we can get quail management back into an agricultural area where we can combine modern agriculture and quail management. Well, on top of this, in the last 4 years, we have 100 acres to our north and 180 acres to our south that we have begun to lease. The Missouri Soybean Association bought this and leased it back to us for research. But if you look at our topography, this gives us some ideal areas that we can manage for wildlife. Not for deer wildlife, let's take that out, but let's go quail type and other type of bird type research. So what problems did we have on this? Well, we had some native warm season grass studies that were done years ago that have now naturalized in part of that area that I showed you, and they're quite thick. And when you have a grass this thick, all it's good for is a scape cover and for deer to bed down in. Not good. We also, where we did not have research plots, but against the edge of the field borders, we farmed right up to that. Again, that's not very conducive to wildlife management. And in these fence rows and streams, the trees were extremely dense. It was good for wild turkey and for deer to hide in, but again, not for quail. And also, we have some invasive species, such as Sericea lespidiza, as well as some of the ones that we planted, such as reed canary grass, that really don't have a good basis for wildlife. But getting onto this project opened up some new doors for some opportunities for cooperation. For example, the Missouri Department of Conservation, they're looking for somebody to partner with, because they have a bad name with the Farm Bureau. Let's get this people on the same page. University of Missouri Outreach and Extension, of course, we were with the Plant Sciences Unit, but now we're in the wildlife management area. The Missouri Soybean Association, by purchasing that land, they became partners automatically, whether they liked it or not, and I've heard them say that they like what we're doing. And of course, the USDA NRCS, we're working with them on not only wildlife, but also conservation methods that we can show on those areas. So, what have we accomplished? We've done some edge feathering, and we're doing most of this replicated trials, because we want to do some research with this that we can get the information back out. Now, this was very thick that I showed you earlier, and we tried to get the wildlife people, the forestry people, and the agronomists together about how many of these trees to take out. And that was a big difference of opinion. The foresters wanted us to keep most of the trees. The wildlife people wanted us to cut most of them down. And with soil conservation, said we got to leave some of these to keep the stream bank from eroding. So Ray actually did all the cutting with a chainsaw. And what we left here were just those that were needed. We also planted the CP33 mixes between 30 and 120 feet along this edge. And what we essentially did was straighten the field line up. So this gave us some different widths that we can start measuring yield out there on the periphery. And this is what it looks like in year two. You can see we have our tree line, and now here's those mixes with wildflowers or forbs. I found out that forbs are weeds that have a nice ring to them. And also some native grasses. So it established very well. And we've used this several times for demonstration, and a lot of people ask, how'd you get established so easily? It just takes patience, and that's something that I've had to learn also. Field borders. When I say field border, I'm talking about a fence row with a few trees in it. We've looked at root plowing to 36 inches compared to putting this CP33 mix out to 30 or 60 feet. Again, then we can come back then and measure the yield and show farmers what options that they might have to do in this. Native warm season grass management. It was very thick. We have had fall and spring burns, as well as fall and spring diskings. Lots of learning on my part here. When I first took a tandem disc to this, found out you can't hardly touch a mat of roots from a warm season grasses with a tandem disc. You gotta go several times, and Ray actually got through disking this later on, and I thought, oh my gosh, you've killed everything. But believe it or not, that's just pretty hard. It does come back. And this is just a comparison. This is unmanaged. You see the Indian grass is very thick. And then here you can see it's also there, but we're getting quite a few of the forbs coming up in it. And it'll also tell you that quail need bare ground underneath to move through. So that's part of our objective here. And the forbs are not only a food source from their seeds, but also the insects that they attract. Waterways and diversion channels that we build in Missouri are usually tall fescue, because tall fescue does an excellent job controlling the soil. Its only drawback on wildlife is It's because of its persistence with the endophyte, no insects are on it. And as a result, it doesn't really have a lot of wildlife benefit. So what we're looking at is, can we, instead of planting tall fescue, plant something else, such as a low-growing switchgrass or a tall switchgrass? Or how about a native cool season grass? We don't talk much about those. But we've used Virginia wild rye, and this shows comparison. There it is, a Virginia wild rye and tall fescue in the background. It gets taller, but it establishes very quickly, and it's more of a bunch grass, so you do not get the thick mat, so you do get some water movement through it, but we still think it's thick enough to control the soil erosion. Also, the Sericea lespidiza, you see this is a mix of native grasses and Sericea, the control. After some burnings and mainly herbicide treatments, we've gotten rid of a lot of it. But as we found out, it is not a one-year deal, but 2 and 3 year accomplishments on that to control it. So how do we use this information? We have a variety of workshops and tours and field days that we incorporate this into. As a matter of fact, we annually have a workshop on the Hale School where the NCIS trains hail damage to wheat and soybeans and corn, and they always want a tour. And what we've done is I gave them a choice. We can tour corn and soybeans, or we can tour quail habitat. And they chose quail habitat. So I guess we're making some points. The Natural Naturalist Program is trained out there. The Audubon Society does bird counts, and we have increased the number of quail by 23 times in the last 5 years based on thistle counts. And we have our annual Integrating Bobwhite Quail Management and Modern Agricultural Field Day. Again, this brings people from all over the state to see firsthand how you can get bobwhite quail management on their land. And this just shows some more. We did include Brent Carpenter. He's an ag economist, to show the economics of doing this versus bulldozing the fence row out versus planting up to the fence row. And that opened a lot of eyes up, as well as myself. And that just shows it takes about, from those individual corn stalks from the edge of the field out to 16 rows, it takes about 12 rows of corn before we get up to a normal before. And of course the inputs are the same as these, as they are here. And just an overview of what we have going on at different spots throughout the research center, both on the main research center and also on the what we call the Bay Farm, or what we lease from. If I have time, Steve, I'll happy to entertain any questions.
We've got time for a question or two.
Yes, sir.
Quail Unlimited sending any money?
That question was Quail Unlimited sending any money? They gave us our first $800 that we did some research with, and that was appreciated. And I must say, since that, MDC has sent us $50,000 for the last 3 years to help support this. Paul?
Have you taken a look at predator counts, red-tail hawks, coyotes, that sort of thing?
The question is, have you looked at predator counts such as hawks and coyotes? No, we haven't, but that'd be a great thing to get the wildlife management classes involved with. That's a great idea, Paul. Yes, sir.
How many quail do you think you have there?
That's a great question, is how many quail do we have? We have, isn't that right, Ray, 7 different coveys out there right now, if you count the whole 880 acres, and they have just expanded over time. There was a rudimentary group there, and they found that you can't really bring quail in. You have to have some population there, but they increase by 50% every year.
John, right, the name
Bird Dogs. Yes. Yes, right. Hunters, there is no hunting on university-owned property. I have not read the rules about lease property.
Don't want to.
No.
Any other questions?
Thanks. Let's give him a round of applause.